Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips and PC. It is Saturday, the, oh Lord, I have no idea, 29th day of March on Adoni 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm your comic relief, Chris Horn, although I'm not really funny or a relief.
That's no relief at all. At 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Because here comes the news. But first, we should acknowledge that Chris Horn has taken time out from sleeping on his couch to come in here and join us today.
I could still be asleep. This could just be a nightmare for all the listeners.
It could be, but he even put pants on, so... We couldn't be more impressed and relieved. That's the relief right there. Right. Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest, hiding out with the Hole in the Head gang. He is, I'm sure, intently trying to remember what the frequency is for the station on the dial so he can listen in.
If his wife will let him.
If his wife will let him. All right, so guess what? There's another zero-day vulnerability that impacts Windows users. Hope you were sitting down. A zero-day vulnerability is one that attackers are actively exploiting right now to compromise Windows devices. This exploit requires no user interaction, with the exception of clicking a single link in a personalized phishing message. Thank you. Tip your waitstaff. This is all that is required to bypass the sandbox protection system built into the Chrome web browser. The exploit bypassed Chrome sandbox protection without performing any obviously malicious operations. It's as if the security boundary simply didn't exist. Chromebox has something called a sandbox, which means that every tab you open is separate from every other tab and separate from the operating system. So theoretically, it's very difficult for something to cross that boundary and damage your system. Unfortunately, this appears to just go through that boundary like it wasn't even there. What's critical about this is that it displays technical sophistication of the type seen by well-resourced threat actors like nation states. Google has released a patch, so please make sure your Chrome browser, actually any Chromium-based browser, is updated to the latest version to protect against this vulnerability. So if you use Chrome or Edge or Vivaldi or Opera or dang near anything but Firefox on Windows, you need to update now. Sadly, Firefox isn't immune either. Mozilla has released Firefox 136.0.4 to patch a critical security vulnerability that can let attackers escape that browser's sandbox on Windows systems. This vulnerability is similar to the Chrome Zero Day. It seems that both of these vulnerabilities affect only Windows systems, so you Linux and Mac people can breathe easy for now, but we recommend you stay up to date anyway. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is both Chrome and Firefox hit by Windows zero-day exploit? Your choices are, I've already updated, I'll update immediately, relax, I'll get around to it, go in commando, baby, and hold on, you can browse the web? So far, we've got 24 votes. And I've already updated as far in the lead. Thank you very much. I love to see that. And, of course, you can vote in the poll yourself at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And then you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
That's why I'm liking DuckDuckGo so much more.
As a web browser?
Yeah.
It's still based on Chromium.
Yeah, but Chrome.
I haven't had any issues. I mean,
if there's an update coming, you should update.
Oh, I do automatically anyways. You know, I don't fool around with that type of stuff. You know, I mean, they advertise it right up in the upper right-hand corner, you know, especially on Chrome and everything else, that, hey, relaunch this. What? It takes a couple of seconds to relaunch your browser.
Yeah, right.
And then you're updated. I mean, it's not like you got to download something and then wait a few minutes and then go back into it. It just says click here and you relaunch your browser and it's all the tabs are back up. You go on with what you're doing. Oh, what? It took maybe 20 seconds?
Yep.
Give me a break, Eastie.
Yeah, if you have a current computer, it's much faster than
that. If you get, you know, you have issues, then, you know what? I don't feel for you one bit.
My paranoia has led me to habitually, aggressively update all of the stuff on my, like, user computers all the time.
Oh, yeah.
A server or something I'm, developing, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something I'm using where I'm interfacing with the internet. Like this one where the vulnerability crosses Chromium and Firefox. That means there's something under the hood foundational between them, between technologies, that is the source of this.
Right.
So it's just going to make me upgrade even harder.
Yeah. Yeah.
I run Linux. So every couple of days, there's some little update. 99.999999% of the time, it runs in the background. All I have to do is click OK.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's a little thing that comes up and says, you got an update. Go. And I go on with my day. And when it's done, I click OK. It's finished. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm done. Two clicks.
And most of the major updates are done overnight when I'm not even using mine. I turn it on and, okay, everything seems to be running. It's all up to date and cool.
Yep, most of the time.
Low maintenance.
My updates load in the background.
Yeah.
And so it really is just, I click it, it installs, I click it, oh, click away, I'm done.
Yeah.
And it, you know, installs everything. So it's if it's 3, 4, 5, 50 packages, I don't care. Because
nope.
I don't care how long it takes, because I can continue working.
Mm-hmm.
I think people that have been computer users for a long time are maybe less aware or more hesitant to update because they remember the days when you rebooted, you had to bring everything back up. You have to launch all your programs.
Yeah.
You got to do everything, all the setup again to get back to where you were.
Yep.
These days, your operating system, your browser, even your applications, they try so hard to make a restart, a reboot, as painless, as not noticeable as possible. You could reboot overnight and maybe not even know.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I just talked to this one gentleman. He had just gotten a brand new Chromebook, and he still had his old computer that was an i5 chip. You know, and he says, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. And we had been talking a while. I says, all right, you got your Chromebook, and it's doing everything you want it to do, right? He goes, oh, yeah, I'm a real happy camper. I says, all right, you've been talking about this. Here's the perfect time to take that machine that's just sitting there now and put Linux on it. I says, you've been, talking about doing it. Put it on there. I says, it'll run great on that machine because he's got a terabyte hard drive on it and plenty of memory, its own separate video card. I says, dude, you're going to love it. I mean, it's just going to scream along. And again, it was telling him how, you know, you can make it look like Windows, Mac, or whatever. There are so many different flavors of it, and the cool thing is you can put a bunch of them down to a flash drive, put, you know, one on it, boot it, test drive it. Even on that machine, it might be a little bit slow, but at least you can try out different ones and see which one you want to put it on. Throw it on, test drive it, and see what you go. Right. What are you going to lose? Nothing. Because now you've got your other machine to do your basic work. This is a toy now.
Right. And I tell people all the time, if you do make a thumb drive, be aware that everything on it is compressed. So when you load something, it takes a long time because it's been compressed on that flash drive.
Yes.
And has to be uncompressed. But once it's running at the real speed.
But the one thing I forgot, didn't mention to say, he pulled a Dave. He was up until 2 o'clock. Because I talked to him. I said, so how you doing, Jeff? Tired.
Yeah.
Why? I was up till 2 o'clock trying.
And he was probably just scrolling through all of the software that's available to just install.
Okay, I got to tell this story again for the people who haven't heard it before. Years ago.
Decades ago.
Decades ago, the internet was brand new. And Dave said, I want to get on the internet. I said, okay, I'll come over. I'll help you get set up.
Yep.
Well, you know, he got his cable internet in. And I went over and we got it all set up. And all of a sudden, it was like I wasn't there. He was hunched over his computer.
Engrossed. I was totally engrossed.
Are you still here?
Yeah. And he was working away. After about 5 minutes, I said, I'm going to go.
Yep.
I said, do you want me to call you to go to bed? He said, no, I'll be fine. I'll be fine. I get a call at 6 o'clock in the morning, which is when he gets his wake-up call.
The second wake-up call.
Yeah. I get a call at 6 o'clock in the morning. I pick up the phone. Hello? I hear profanity. I said, Dave, up all night, were you?
Yep. Well, my late wife, we had this answering service because she was terrible about waking up. And I answered both, because we get two of them.
Yeah.
The first one, just to get you going, then the second one, just to make sure that you were up. And I answered both of them. Do you want me to go back? No, I'm up now. Never went to bed.
I'm sure that day at work.
I was a walking zombie. I don't know how I repaired any computers on that one.
Yeah. But
Let alone at work, because I was still working at Kodak at the time.
Yeah, but the thing that Dave is utterly correct about is that if you have a working computer that you are actually doing your work on and you have a second machine, it's a toy. Why not play? If you haven't used Linux and you think, you know, I'm tired of Windows, I'm interested in moving on. You have really only two choices, a Mac and Linux.
Mm-hmm.
At least you can play with Linux. I know there's Hackintoshes. You can play with Linux on an old machine. It costs you nothing. Every single thing that you can use on Linux, you can find a free version of.
Or the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or the exact same thing. Right. For example, I have a 3D printer, and I use a slicer, and I was really kind of lusting after this one slicer that I suddenly realized, they have a Linux version.
Yeah.
It's free.
Yeah.
I will download it now, and now I am happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's just like me. The only thing that was stopping me was finding a different version of QuickBooks.
Right.
And I happened to get...
Well, I told you about
Money Dance. And I got hooked on Money Dance, and it's great. I mean, it'll run on any platform, Mac, PC, Linux, even my cell phone.
Right.
You can have it on there. And it is worldwide as far as support. And the support, I can't say enough. You know, it is unbelievable. And I think what the membership cost me, I think it was a whole $40. And that was, you know, it's like we're on version, I believe it's 24 right now. So any updates they do to, like, say 24.1 or 2, I'm covered.
Yep.
And if I want to go, if they then come out with 25, say 2 years down the road or whatever, if I want to go to it, I can.
Right.
But it doesn't cripple it. You know, all of a sudden it's not stop working and all this other stuff. Whereas QuickBooks, Now that's going to subscription. And you got to pay every year. Otherwise, they shut it down. Well, they literally shut it down.
Windows is going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's what Microsoft 365 is all about.
They've been saying that to their investors for years. And you do not lie to your investors.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You might be considering trying out Chrome OS. Maybe I want a Chromebook or something.
Right, exactly.
And this last week, I put Flex OS, which is the free aftermarket version of Chrome OS that you can run on anything because it's just a flavor of Linux.
Right.
Yep.
And it was great. And it's another example of how you could just put it on a flash drive and run it off of that to try it out. Especially if you've got an old computer, you could just keep reinstalling it or just keep booting off of, this Linux Mint or this brand new cutting edge version of Ubuntu or whatever kind of Linux you want to try. They all work. And you know that if you install it on your real hardware right on the hard drive, it'll be 10 times faster.
Right, exactly. But you can try it all out. Even something like Money Dance, which you pay for to use, you can try it out for free. You get 500, not accounts, something, transactions. I forget what it is. You get 500 of them anyway.
Maybe it might be updates or something.
Yeah. I don't remember. Anyway, to the phones. Our first caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. What's up, Brian?
Good morning, or good afternoon, more appropriately, guys. First, I want to start with thanking you for all the time that you have spent with this show. You've been an incredible resource, I think, not just our community, but the country writ large. So thank you so much.
It is our pleasure.
Well, it's a remarkable thing. Quick question. I think it would be a simple one. I bought a Chromebook laptop a while ago, and I am in love with it. It's simple. It's easy. It's wonderful. And I have started looking for like a notepad kind of thing, something a little smaller, a little more portable than the notebook, you know, I can use as a reader and do a couple things on. But I would like to be able to kind of also connect with the Chrome operating system. Does someone make a smaller kind of notepad with a Chrome OS?
That's a great question.
Hmm.
I've seen 11-inch.
Yeah, and I think it has a tablet interface if you have it on a laptop that has handwriting recognition, like a touchscreen. But I think what Google would suggest is just getting an Android tablet.
Right. How do you want to interface with it?
Well, if for example, I want to share data, you know, I have a contacts on the notebook or the pad, and I want them to automatically connect with the laptop and update. So share information back and forth through Google. It's a Chromebook, or Chrome, rather. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's one of the things. I have Chrome on my phone, too. And I love it. I love the fact that, you know, when you update something on one device, it automatically connects and shares the information with the other device.
Okay,
I also like that whenever you shut it down and you start it again, it updates the OS.
Right. So if you're looking to share contacts across your operating systems, if you use Google's Contacts app.
Okay.
You can use that on a Chromebook. You can use that on Android, you can use it through the web on any other device. So if you're running Windows or Linux or a Mac, you can see the same ones on your web browser. And that's true of a lot of other things. If you're looking for a small computer, the smallest one I've seen is the Lenovo Chromebook Duet, which is a 10-inch tablet.
Okay.
That's the smallest one I've seen. It's got a touch screen. It runs Chrome OS.
And I don't think you'd want to get much smaller than that.
It's pretty small.
Yeah, that gets a little rough on the eyes, especially if you're over 50.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty far past 50 at this point.
Yeah. So, 50's not even in the rear view anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lenovo tablet, you said, right?
Lenovo Chromebook Duet.
Ah, okay.
Is the name of it.
And it's probably Duet because it's like a tablet mode, but also a laptop mode kind of combo. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, great. And they have this 11. Wonderful. That looks like the 11-inch. Yeah, 11-inch.
Yes, there's also a 10-inch, if you prefer that.
Okay. Okay.
So just take a look. There is a 10-inch. Lenovo makes about 60 gazillion.
Yeah. Wide variety.
The Duet Gen 9 is an 11-inch tablet. And that's probably the one you want.
And if you don't like it, remember his name is Nick Francesco.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Or just sound bites. We'll all try it.
We're a worldwide resource. Don't forget that.
We're all willing to beta test it for him.
Sure. Bring it on over a couple of months later. We'll swap it to another one of us a couple of months later. You'll get it sometime around January.
Maybe. We're not saying in what year.
You're right.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you, guys, as always.
All right, have fun.
I mean, that works for me.
Yeah. Look, with a product like a Chromebook, you can run the Chrome apps, of which there are a plethora, but you can also run Linux on it and run Linux programs. You need a decent amount of RAM for that. You want at least 8 gig for that.
Yeah, but any supported Chromebook will let you do that these days.
Right. And you can also run Android apps. So, particularly for his instance, for example, he could run the Android version of Contacts and bring that up on his Chromebook.
Yeah. Yeah.
And run it.
Yeah. But realistically, anything that will connect to the internet, that's an operating system, will let you do some sort of account connection synchronization with Google and Microsoft and Apple/iCloud.
Yep.
Right? They want to make that as ubiquitous as possible.
Right.
And they say it's an account connection because it's your mail and your calendar and your contacts.
Right. So you can run all of those through the web browser, and in some instances you might prefer to run it as an Android app. All right, back to the phones. We have Chuck from Penfield, New York. What's up, Chuck?
Hi, gentlemen. I could use a little wireless network education.
Sure.
I have a wireless print server that I'm trying to connect. I had one on a few weeks back that worked real slick, but it was kind of had some shortcomings. So I picked up another one, and it will be on the wireless network for anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour, and then it'll just get dropped. And I'm trying to find out what mechanism allows the wireless server, the router,
to
keep everybody, I'm here.
Oh, no.
Don't lose me. I just want to sleep.
We're with you.
Okay. Do you know, I've looked at system logs. This is an Asus router. I've called Asus, and when I talked to their tech support, It pretty much sounds like they're kind of, well, try this and call us back. Try this and I think they're just guessing at it. And nobody knows for sure what the mechanism is that keeps a wireless device on and connected until you need it.
Yeah. Well, luckily we have a plan.
Okay.
We do have a plan, but we have less than a minute. So we're going to have to take a break, but we want you to not hang up.
Okay.
So you've got an Asus wireless print server.
Right.
And what?
I have an Asus router. And I had a Linksys very old print server that worked fine.
Yep.
And I upgraded that to a D-Link, which now has 4 USB ports and a scanner. And
it's a physical print server. It's not just a wireless printer.
It's a wireless device that you connect any one of four USB ports to a printer.
All right, hang on. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, me, Nick Francesco, Chuck from Penfield. Look, we're going to take a break is what's about to happen. I know that part. And then we're going to come back and have more show, and there'll be phone calls and us and things and stuff. So don't go too far. Listen to the break stuff, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Chris Horn. That's all I got.
It's all you need.
Yeah.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we still have Chuck from Penfield on the line. You still there, Chuck?
Yep, I'm still here.
Oh, that's too bad.
What version of the D-Link print server do you have?
What I have is an ASUS RT AC68U B1 router, and the D-Link is a DPR 1260. And they both have the latest firmware.
Right, and I found the DPR 1260, and what I'm looking for is there some web-based configuration for it where we could look at how it's configured.
Okay.
Maybe it's configured to go to sleep. Now, separately from everything else, is that print server.
It works when I set it up, and I can print to it and all the other stuff, but I thought I had it fixed. I went to bed last night and it was on. I got up this morning and it was still on, and I was like, that's great.
Yeah.
I had breakfast and I came back and it was off. And then I get is a deauthorized, disassociated due to inactivity.
Right. So what I think is a warning sign is that D-Link hasn't supported that print server since 2012.
Right.
And Wi-Fi has changed a lot since then.
I tried to use the oldest configuration, if you want to use that phrase. I'm using legacy mode. This is a wireless G device, 20 megahertz bandwidth, authentication is WPA personal is what I set it at. And it does connect and it makes a connection. If I power cycle it, comes right back up. We're good to go.
Okay, so a couple of things. First, WPA personal is
old
and broken.
Okay.
So there's if you can use a different security setup, that would be better.
Okay.
The second thing is, does it only work in legacy mode, or can you work it in non-legacy mode?
I've tried it in non-legacy mode, but it only stays on for 20 minutes or half an hour, as opposed to when I went to legacy mode, it seemed to stay on all night. I thought I had her beat, but no such luck.
All right, so one thing you can try is there's a web-based interface to this.
On the D-Link?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you can go into it, take a look at something called sleep or something called lease time.
Now, I looked at where would I find it, because I've looked for something like that all over, and I've not been able to find it.
Well, if you in the manual for that,
okay,
it should tell you where you can go. So you would go to your web browser.
Yep.
And type in an address like 192.168.1.4.
Yep. And I've got that up. I can get that configuration set up here.
Okay. All right. So I'm not familiar with that. It's some sort of quick wizard thing or something or other.
Yep.
I'm not familiar with it, but it should have something in there that says, you know, how long do you stay active before you go to sleep?
So you're thinking that when it goes to sleep is when the router loses its connection?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I do have another printer that doesn't happen to. It's an actual wireless printer without the print server, and that doesn't happen. But it may have its own internal mechanism that says, even though I say I'm asleep, I'm not.
Right, router. Exactly.
But it's also probably a newer printer.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah, because so even if it's doing WPA personal, which we would suggest you not use.
Okay, yeah. I was just trying to get it to work. Anything to get it to work, and then back up
so
from there.
It also looks like that there's an Ethernet, like a LAN port on the back of the print server. You could just, if you can connect up a wire to your ASUS.
Yeah.
Then you could skip doing Wi-Fi at all, and I bet it'll work a lot better. And then you could also switch to WPA3 personal.
Well, that was the whole idea of the concept, though.
right, yeah.
To get it to wireless.
I hear you.
I wired it to set it up, configure it, and you pull wire, you just disconnect and reboot it, and then you're wireless.
What's the printer?
The printer is an older HP color laser jet.
Yeah.
And the printer works fine.
Sure.
I have no problem with the printer. Once I got this to work, there was a couple other printers that I've got that I thought I would try and hook up.
So if it wasn't... So initially we were thinking, like, all right, maybe you live close enough to your neighbors where they have a Wi-Fi network on the same channel you do, and there's some conflict there.
No, I checked the channels.
Yep, and it's none of that.
We're separated.
I think it's your print server is old and not very good at Wi-Fi.
It just doesn't want to talk.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, So your color laser jet does not have Wi-Fi?
No.
Okay.
And that's what I was trying to set up. And this is not for any major business environment. This is a let's see if this works kind of thing.
I wouldn't get rid of that print server. I would probably hold on to that. I'm not a hoarder. I can get rid of stuff.
yeah. Okay. I mean the only indication I get is it goes along fine, and then I'll get on the in the system log. Disassociated due to inactivity.
Yeah.
So the system log is from the ASUS or your computer?
From the ASUS. Yeah, from the ASUS.
But that's okay.
The router says I'm dropping you because.
But that's okay.
You're not.
Right. It should be okay. If your printer goes to sleep or the print server goes to sleep, it's going to disassociate. So what Nick said, I think, is still the right strategy.
Okay.
What can you do to make it not go to sleep when it's not being used? Just stay on the Wi-Fi.
Well, that's from the D-Link end of the world. I'm not seeing anything. I looked for something like that in their configuration files, and I haven't seen that. There's a wireless setting, and there's a networking setting, and some stuff like that.
There's nothing that says, for example, keep alive.
I haven't seen it. I've been looking, and there's not a whole. It's not like the ASUS has got 100 different configuration mechanisms. The D-Link's only got 15 or 20, and there doesn't seem to be anything like that. I've got under wireless. I've got while I'm talking to you, it just disconnected. I don't know what happened. It just dropped out.
So if you go in the ASUS and you look for the current DHCP leases, does one of them say that it's the D-Link?
Yes, and there's one thing that I tried, but it didn't seem to work under wireless. You can...
That's not what I'm asking. I'm not asking you to change your wireless. I'm saying that your D-Link has an IP address, and if you type that IP address into your browser, can you go to... You know, like Nick said, 192.168.1.something is likely.
Yep.
You go to that address.
And that brings me up the D-Link configuration mechanism, yeah.
Right. And that mechanism there, is there anything about timeout? Because this is, I think it's a problem with the D-Link and not the ASUS.
Well, I would tend to agree there, too. I mean, my feelings is, and I don't, that's why I was asking what the mechanism here is, you know, the guy on the far end from the router is supposed to be have his hand up and say, "Hey, don't forget me. I'm still here."
Yeah, but it may not be the printer that's
not the printer itself. The print server.
The D-Link server is going to sleep.
Right.
So if in the ASUS router, you can take a look at the lease time.
Oh, okay.
For it. So what happens is when you come up on a network, you say, give me an IP address.
Yep.
And the server says, here's one.
Yep.
And it's valid for 24 hours.
Okay.
And then halfway through that, 12 hours, you say, hey, I'm still here. How about renewing my lease? And it says, okay, now I'm going to renew it for 12 hours.
Okay, okay.
And then at 6 hours, you ask again, and et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So what it sounds like is the D-Link router, the D-Link print server, is not asking for renewal of the lease.
But it could also be something really weird, like the printer, it goes to sleep.
Not requesting anything.
Right. Like my printer says, all right, I'm going to go into sleep mode. And the D-Link says, well, we're going into sleep mode. Let's shut down. So, honestly, I could see that, but it seems like a setting.
I would write a little program that pinged the print server every 15 minutes.
That's a good test. If you, on your computer, if you leave the status window open for the printer,
yep.
The print queue, something like that, if you leave that open, does it keep working?
Oh, okay.
Because that would be a thing where your computer is continually asking the D-Link, is anybody printing? Is anybody printing?
Okay, in order to refresh that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It would be a good test. You can throw that on a window and minimize it. Just leave it.
Yeah, yeah, but have it open so that in the background it keeps pinging in a sense.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I like that as a test, but I also like looking through the D-Link settings.
Yeah, the D-Link should have a thing that comes back and says every so often, hey, I'm here.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
It should also have something that talks to the printer every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, yeah. And even though the printer may have gone to sleep, if I've got four printers on this device, I mean, that's the maximum on it, you would be able to... Two of them, three of them would go to sleep, but one would still be there.
Right.
And the print server, the D-Link, should still be connected to the router and say, yeah, we're still alive. Don't forget us.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
But try the print queue idea.
Okay, yeah, all right.
I just downloaded the manual for your print server, and there's nothing in here about timeouts or
I didn't see anything either. I went back and that kind of was one of the earlier things that crossed my mind, and I kept going through. Now, I don't know if maybe we're at firmware level 124, 1.24. I don't know if maybe that mechanism was available in earlier firmware versions. I mean, I could try that kind of game of backing that up. But
it looks like this hardware was made for Windows XP.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back a little way.
It's a nice
configuration setup with four. You can put four printers on it and put it on your network that way.
Well, there are 1,000 current wireless printers that also can let you put four printers on their print server.
Yeah, yeah.
They let you put four printers on the network and eight. I mean, so it may come down to the fact that look, this is a 20-year-old device.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to...
Not going to cut the mustard in today's world.
We're just going to let it live on a farm upstate.
Yeah.
Okay. Unless it's fossilized mustard, in which case it would be fine.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Good luck, Jack.
I'll give that a try. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Those are the fun kind of...
I do that to myself. Challenges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I get this antique piece of hardware working?
Except if what you need is for that hardware to actually work.
Right.
If you need it to work, it's not a game.
If it's an experiment, fine. I want to rely on it, I'm gonna.
And you know whether it's for your home use or particularly for your business use, the answer is sometimes you have to. We have somebody wants to come in. You have to at some point say we got to buy something newer. We got to buy something that's supported in the 21st century. There's no question that.
But
there's a donation. That's possible.
A little Raspberry Pi as a print server is 10 out of 10. Pretty great.
Yep.
That's just a little Linux box.
Yep, and that'll work. I've seen people put print servers on that, and you can.
I've done those.
Come with four USB ports as well.
It does indeed.
So you're good there.
And you can get a Raspberry Pi for $20 because you don't need a new one. You just need one that works.
You need one that works, and you know it's going to cost you. Well, then you got to buy a power supply, so you're more looking like.
But the old Raspberry Pis run off of any USB.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, the new ones are a little fancier, but
I do not have a 5 yet. Yet I have a 400.
The 400's nice.
I really like the
Raspberry Pi 400. That's all in one. It's like
it's in the keyboard.
It's like a VIC-20 or a Commodore 64.
Exactly.
Let's see. I've got 1, 2, 3.
Source of the exit.
Four fours.
Yeah, so do I. But only one of them is a 400.
Yeah. Well, no. I've got 4 fours and then a 400, and then on my All-Star node that is a Raspberry Pi 3B.
There you go.
Because the 3Bs were a really reliable unit compared to the others.
I'm not going to tell you guys how many I have because there's a chance my wife will find out, and it's just going to go badly for me. Because it gets into, what about the Raspberry Pi Picos or ESP32s?
And that's the problem. It's not just a Raspberry Pi. It's like 6 Raspberry Pis. Each one has its own feature set that you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to come out with a 500.
That could be my wife calling in right now, and she's going to go through the
house looking for.
Yeah,
it's. I'm looking. I'm waiting for the 500.
Yeah,
that's coming out.
Yeah,
and I'm going to get one. That's not even a question. What am I going to do with it? I don't know.
I ran Kubernetes on the Raspberry Pi 4s that I had.
Yeah, but there comes a point where I don't have anything to do with this device.
I have something new for you to do.
Okay.
And that's Home Assistant.
Oh, yes. I've been looking at that for the 400.
I don't, you know, might be out of the scope for our normal radio station show, but that is a really fun thing to do at home in terms of integrating all of your Internet of Things and printers and cloud stuff into one place. And if you go as far as wanting to solder things and connect up sensors, it'll pull all of that in and give you a dashboard. And
if that doesn't make you happy, there's the ones that run your own private AI system.
Yeah.
Where you can, it's essentially Siri or
yes.
Echo or yeah,
but,
whatever.
Right. Home Assistant is one of the options you have if you want Alexa be able to talk to Google Home, to be able to talk to Siri.
And also maybe
talk to your own thing at the same time.
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Dwayne from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dwayne?
Hey. There's changes in two interesting apps. I don't know if some of your listeners have realized that GIMP is now at version 3.
Yes, sir.
And just got that on my Linux box, and aside from just some minor user interface, it's basically the same thing with a lot more under the hood.
Yep.
GIMP is my image editor of choice.
GIMP stands for GNU Image Manipulation Program, and it is an all-out graphics program. If pretty much anything you would want to be able to do with graphics, pretty much you can do in the GIMP.
Yeah, and this is for people that say, well, you know, I have to stay on my Windows machine because I use Photoshop. And I'm not saying that you can transfer from Photoshop to GIMP in a day or even a week or even a month, but there is an alternative to Photoshop if that's all that's keeping you on a Windows machine.
Right. And for a normal end user, it's going to do everything you would do with
Photoshop. It's
going to
do more than you want.
Yeah.
Photo processing, you know, cropping, you know, doing stuff like that.
There are plenty of alternatives out there. You just got to do some looking and trying them.
And GIMP is very powerful, right? It's very powerful in the same kind of way that Photoshop is.
Yeah, what I'm looking for in GIMP 3 is to have help readily available, because on version 2 what I found is you're in the middle of something and you think, well, it would be nice if I had contact contacts, you know, related help, and it's going to tell me what to do where, you know, I'm in the middle of something, and I've never been able to get around, you know, having to go online and look online for GIMP help. It'd be nice if you could just click within GIMP and say, you know, I'm trying to do this thing with a background. Could you, you know, give me some context-related help on backgrounds, you know, that mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Well, what you do is you point your mouse to the object you need help with. You don't click on it. You just point to it and then press F1.
Okay. I'm going to try that. Because, you know, there's a lot of times when I've been in the middle of a project and you have to get out, get on the web, and, you know, do a web search for something. And which brings you to a YouTube video, which you got to watch for 5 or 8 minutes, depending on how many ads are in it. And then you find someone that tells you how to do it in GIMP, you know.
Yeah. Right. So, but like I said, if let's say you point the mouse to a specific what they call element. So that's a window, yep. a dialogue, a menu entry, a tool, okay. whatever it is. And then while the mouse pointer is over that, press F1.
Because help is context sensitive.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want. The other thing I want to mention is Thunderbird is now on Android. In fact, it's up to Android. Its version is 9. And the Thunderbird experience was in development for a while, and then I was watching the more or less release, and they've been releasing, I would say, new version every month or two for the last year. So Thunderbird on Android is nice. It's never going to be the Thunderbird that you're used to on a desktop,
right?
But yeah. It seems to be very stable, and if you know, you're unhappy with your email client on your Android, you know, give it a try to Thunderbird. Just bring it up, use it in parallel with whatever you got, and see if you like it.
Yep, that's a good thing. Thunderbird is a terrific product. It's from Mozilla, the same people who put out Firefox. And I use it every day. Thanks.
Great. You have two apps, and both of them are winners.
Yeah, they both are. Thank you, Dwayne. Awesome. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, a lot of things are moving to Android because so much of what people do now is mobile first, phone first.
Yeah.
They really look to their phones to do things and then something else. So back in the day when you wrote a website and then said, you know, let me see if I can make this mobile, too.
Uh-huh.
It's the other way around now.
Absolutely, because that's where the users are.
Yeah. And I'm a hypocrite because Soundbites, it's not really as mobile-friendly as you might think.
Well, there's still time.
Well, there's still time, and I'm not really a professional programmer. That might come as a shock to everybody but me. but, yeah, so... I've been playing with Free Simple GUI lately. It's a Python library
okay.
to do graphical interface stuff. And they it's like this thing. Or
yeah. Yeah. Like you have this little program that you just want it to be, you know, have some interaction with a real user.
With that one.
And not a text interface.
Right, it's a graphical interface thing, and it really works well. And I've been playing with that, but theoretically that has, you can use it on Android and on the web as well. I haven't played with any of that. I don't write real code anymore.
I think that's fascinating. The frameworks or the toolkits that you let you deliver something to a regular computer, but also a website, but also
yep.
A phone or a mobile device, that is pretty amazing.
And, without and having to rewrite savings. All your code.
Yeah, right. Right. Like if you do it the right way, you kind of do it once.
This is my target goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what's making it easy to write apps these days, which is why we see so many of them. Sadly, it also makes it easy to write bad apps.
You can deliver bugs faster than ever.
Exactly right.
That's my only talent, by the way.
Bug generation.
Yeah.
Put it on your resume. All right. That music tells us that the first hour of this show is in the books. It is history. It is a dead parrot. But do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright. A whole nother hour, thankfully, of Chris Horn. A whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco. And a whole nother hour of you. But only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Also, don't forget, the pledge drive is coming up. So start saving your nickels. That starts pretty soon, and we will be, starts Monday. Well, so we'll be doing it next Saturday. So please be aware of that, and be aware that we'll be looking for your help. But right now, we'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I am the legally approved Chris Horn.
Well, legally Chris Horn, not necessarily approved.
Well,
don't get ahead of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Fred from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Fred?
Oh, a whole bunch of things. It seems the more I listen to your program, the more things that come up. The gentleman that called earlier, we'll start with that, the GNU is image manipulating program, is that what?
Yeah, GIMP.
Right.
G-I-M-P.
Yeah, it's in your repository, so you can just do sudo apt install GIMP.
Okay, got the crazy little picture of a guy, a mouse with his brush in his hand?
No.
I have in the repository came up a GNU image manipulation program.
That's it, the GNU image manipulation program, the GIMP.
Okay. So I'm installing that, try it out. In looking for that, there used to be an icon on the left-hand side that said App Center. That disappeared. And an icon on my apps, down at the bottom it says Show Apps. On there it said Ubuntu Software.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's an update.
Yeah, they replaced that.
Oh, okay. So yeah. I didn't do something wrong. I just...
No, that's an Ubuntu thing. I think it's just whatever their latest major update is. They rename stuff.
I just went through and updated all the Chrome. Actually, earlier this week, updated all the Chrome on all of my devices.
Good.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a ordeal for some devices. What I have is a Bose Resolve SoundLink Bluetooth speaker. And on my Linux machine, I'm not getting the volume that I would get out of, say, my phone. I listen to Pandora.
Okay.
And I'm not getting the volume that I could get out of the other device. Any suggestions where to turn?
So it doesn't go as loud if you connect to it from Linux?
Yeah, on my Linux machine, I have a HP 850, HP 800.
Yeah, and which Linux are you running again?
Ubuntu 2404.
That's interesting.
Okay, so... And you've got your sound set up to maximum.
Yeah. Everywhere I have a plus sign to do that.
Okay. Depending on the version of Linux you run, you could open up a terminal and type in Alsa Mixer, ALSA MIXER.
That sounds right for Ubuntu. Ubuntu using ALSA as the default.
AL what?
ALSA.
SA.
Mixer.
All one word?
All one word. And it should bring up in the terminal, it should bring up a quasi graphical looking thing.
Yep.
And you should be able to set volumes there.
It says 100 master. Is there a slide? Is it a slider or is it just an arrow?
It's all. I believe it's. You know how long it's been since I ran Nelson Mixer?
Yeah.
I think it's arrows, left and right to pick the various equalizer, and then arrows up and down to see how far it goes. So, for example, you might find the master's at 100, but the PCM is only at 60.
Okay, so I have, it says master at the bottom, it's got arrows on either side of that, and it does nothing with the mouse.
No, it's a command line program, so you would have to run it with your
keyboard?
With your keyboard.
Okay, arrow left and right. Oh, okay, so the master I can go up and down.
But is there anything in that list that's not at 100%?
There's only one thing showing on the screen.
And what is it? Oh, one. There's only one slider.
Yeah, just the master.
Then you've got a tricky problem.
Oh, wait a minute. You got capture. If I tab, I get capture.
Yeah, it's not capture. I think it's what Nick said. It's probably PCM. That sounds right.
Yeah, I just have to. I have just the one showing. I have F keys that are help and system information.
All right. So if you hit F6,
okay.
Do you see multiple sound cards?
I see one default 0 HDA Intel. PCH.
So there are multiple listings there.
Yeah, I just see the one.
Just the one. Okay.
This is tricky.
Yeah.
It's tricky because there's a lot of potential little settings.
Yeah.
And you only have, you don't have, that's really weird because usually at least you have two, but okay, you've only got one sound card.
It says default. And then the next one down is HDA Intel PCH. And then next down it says enter device name, but.
Okay, so you've got two sound cards. So you can pick one by going using the up and down arrows. And you may get a different set of stuff on the other one.
Okay, right. Say that.
One of them should be your Bluetooth device.
Yep. They all fired up. Headphones, speaker, 100%. PC is 100%. Mic boost, beep is 100%.
And the masters are 100%.
Masters at 100%.
Okay, and so if you try the other sound card, you get that original one again.
Let me go back. I went back too far. Okay, yeah, just have the one. 6 again. Default is, yeah, I just got the default. You've got the default and the HDA one.
Intel. Yeah, so the other one is the one that seems to have everything, but
yeah.
It sounds like they're all up, so it sounds like your sound card is at its max when it's doing that.
Yeah, and it could be that Windows or other devices have some sort of volume boost above and beyond that they do. And I know there's a way to do that with Linux, but talking you through how to do that, I can't do from there.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm wondering, is it possibly a plug-in speaker that would do all that?
Well, try one last thing. We got to move on, but we got to try one last thing. Up in the, you have a speaker icon, correct?
Yes.
Okay, if you click on it, you should see at the bottom of the pop-up window, audio mixer.
Right.
I see built-in audio speaker.
Stop.
Okay.
Just, we're going to do this generically because we got to move on.
Yeah, no mixer.
Okay, so you click on that icon and you see audio mixer. The audio mixer brings up something that's probably called volume control. And you see a number of tabs, playback, recording, output devices, input devices, and configuration. You should see on playback, and you may have to scroll down. There may be a lot of stuff there, a number of different devices, and you should be able to set the volume not only to 100%, but well above 100% on each of those devices. So find your Bluetooth device and set it higher.
Yeah.
And we got to move on, Fred. I'm sorry.
I do have one other question, but...
I'm sorry, Fred. We got to move on. I'm sorry.
So luckily, sound devices are all structurally basically the same across operating systems.
Right.
The hard part is that getting to the point where you can see how they're all structured the same is really arcane, and operating systems move that around to be in different spots from version to version. And it's a, like, all right, if you keep poking at it, you can get to the point where the individual devices, the individual parts of each device are settable, and maybe you can overdrive it, or you can set the audio settings for a particular application to be different.
Right.
But it's arcane.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Dave?
Well, as a proud Jazz Money Manic person, I'm I'm glad to have you guys on board. Thank you for the information on the updating of the Chromebooks. I'm doing that now.
Good.
Secondly, you mentioned at a prior caller, I believe, a Linux type of Chrome operating system.
Yeah. Chrome OS Flex.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's from Google.
And it's essentially Chrome OS for not a Chromebook. So if you've got an old laptop that you want to run like a Chromebook, you put Chrome OS Flex on it.
And you can even run that on some Chromebooks that are like end of life.
End of life.
Well, that was my next question. Last year I mentioned that I had a Google Edge, I believe it's called. And I guess sometime this year it's going to be end of life.
Yep.
Situation.
Yep.
Which I've been meaning to rant and rave to Google about, but, you know, life gets in the way. At any rate, would this be a good substitute to put on that, or for that matter, I've got a Chromebook that
so has Google has a list of supported hardware. And even if your device is not in that list, you could still try and install it. And their installer works the same way on a Chromebook that making any of the recovery images would take, which is you use the Chromebook recovery extension. It's part of Chrome OS.
Right.
And then you plug in a thumb drive and it says, okay, I'm gonna update this. And instead of picking the make and model of your Chromebook, you pick Google, and then I want to say Chrome Flex OS is the selection. I did this last week, so and then you try and install it, and if it works, it works. I put it on an old iMac, and it worked great.
Yeah, I've got my daughter's old laptop, very old laptop, and I was wondering if that would work as opposed to putting a Linux.
There's no reason not to try it if you're comfortable with Chrome OS. And if that doesn't work, Linux will always happily take you and work.
Okay, great. Great. Thank you very much, guys.
You're welcome.
Yep. And just because I've put... we actually had it on our site already. I've moved it to the top, the Chrome OS Flex certified models list.
Oh,
and
perfect.
As you said, even if it's not certified, it may work.
Yeah.
But certified is just somebody got around at Google. Somebody got around and said, yeah, this one works.
Yep. Yep.
So, it does.
Yeah. Like if you have a computer that's otherwise not good for anything, I would try it. I would try it all.
Yeah,
until
absolutely.
I found something I liked.
All right. Our next caller is our friend Al from Rochester, New York. What's up, Al?
Well, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
And a good afternoon to you.
That's true. I should look out the window once in a while.
Yeah.
Hey, it's just trivia time. I want to thank you guys. You listen to me whine and complain about the fragility of USB-C ports, and I'd had some bad luck with a couple devices. But I actually was able to resurrect one of them when I cleaned out all the crud and dust out of the port of my Google Pixel 6 Pro. Digging it out with a paperclip and whatever, and all of a sudden, voila, I can now plug a cable in and charge and extract data or load data.
Yep. One of the things that people don't realize is that the USB port, particularly on their phone, picks up every bit of lint and crumbs and crud and everything else that's in your pocket when you shove it in there. And that cleaning it out once in a while carefully, very, very, very carefully, may give you a better connection, a faster charge, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's why I don't carry sandwiches in my pockets anymore.
Well, that's what I've also recommended to people, you know, on your vacuum cleaner, if you've got a hose, you know, that you do suction, say, of furniture and all that, you can
one with the little narrow end.
Yeah, you can take it to the end of that and suck it on out. Because that's usually got a pretty good pressure, you know, suction power that it can suck any dirt and all that out there. That
the proper amount of suction.
Yeah. So you don't have to.
And you can use that on the speakers on the phone as well.
Yep.
Well, in this case, there was so much in there, I think it was preventing the plug from being pushed in
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yep. Definitely.
That can happen.
And I was pushing strongly, and that still wasn't enough. So, anyways, thank you for that.
Yep.
I've got my phone back, and maybe I'll wait till Pixel 10 before I upgrade.
Don't say that, because then it'll die sooner on you. And like me, the only reason I've had to get rid of any of my Pixel phones is because the battery wouldn't hold a charge. It never really, you know, malfunctioned or anything else. It just wouldn't hold a charge.
Although, Al, I'm a little disappointed. This was the perfect opportunity to say to your wife, honey, I have to buy a new phone because I can't charge this.
Or, honey, you have a newer Pixel than I do.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Mm. Well, that's a good thought. But, yeah, I'm holding out, and I'm using it to, I've set the charge level to 80% max.
Good.
So I'm going to baby it along. We'll see it. Hey, but other things for you. Two things. One is, I've also whined and complained about Windows 11 and having to spend 8 days trying to get loaded on a three-year-old laptop.
Yeah.
One of the things that can really slow you down is if you use Steve Gibson's In Control app that locks your version down to whatever level you're currently at. It really does interfere with Windows 11.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I understand the idea behind that, but Microsoft doesn't want you to do that. The operating system has these expectations that it can do its own thing, and when you interfere with that, the whole computer could run badly.
Well, I have to disagree with you a little bit, because I would say I was very happy locking myself to Windows 10 as long as I wanted to, and then by making the choice of saying, okay, Windows 11, second cut, okay, well, then now we'll lock onto that for a while.
But what Gibson does is give you the opportunity to move on your schedule.
Exactly.
And that's a good thing, except, of course, your schedule better be October 14th.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Hey, final thing for you, just under licensing and whatever. Adobe is following the trend, and that we saw it coming, but the new Photoshop Elements 2025 is only available with a three-year limited license.
Yes.
So you pay for your 3 years.
Right.
And the 3 years.
They don't want you to own anything.
Yeah.
Even Photoshop Elements, right? Like, that's supposed to be the light, consumer-friendly,
right,
not the big show app.
Oh, right, but I'll tell you, I use it for 95% of all my work.
Well, and that's just it. What happened to Adobe was, their thought originally was, Photoshop is the big one, we'll lock people into that, and the peons will use Element. But it turns out everybody's using Element.
Yeah.
So now they have to lock people into that one, too.
So, anyways, basically it comes down to, if you don't want to get locked in to something where the editor part of the Photoshop Elements is going to die in 3 years, get a copy of 2024, and then you don't have to worry about
that. And never upgrade.
Right, you don't have to upgrade
if
you choose to.
Right. So, all right.
That's my rant or complaints for the week. So.
Well, now you can rest easy for an entire 6 days.
Thank you. On to paying my taxes. Thank you.
Hey, good luck. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
So
we all have to pay our taxes. What am I laughing at?
Yeah, right. That's not funny.
Right.
Oh. So the Steve Gibson tool reminds me, and I think I've probably mentioned these before, but the Chris Titus tools for Windows. If you go to your browser and search for Chris Titus tools, there's a command line you can copy into your PowerShell on Windows 10 or 11. And I use that on all of my Windows computers, but it is expert mode only. And your ability to shoot yourself in the foot, even though it has warnings on all the things that it does, it's got warnings, but it's very powerful. And as far as locking myself in and not letting Microsoft's AI stuff, Copilot, run in the background, I can turn all that off.
Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. What's up, Steve?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Couple questions about updating to Windows 11. I have some friends who have old computers, and they will not want to go to Windows 11. Anyway, would you talk about Zero Patch? I have just heard about Zero Patch, and if they go to 11, I know there's like Open Shield and, you know, Ultra Shield and things like that. Could you talk about maybe what are those layovers and how well they work making the Windows 11 interface look like Windows 10?
Well, the big difference, of course, between 11 and 10 is that the taskbar is in the middle instead of over on the left, and you can change that just by right-clicking on the taskbar and telling it go live on the left.
Yeah, but everything's big in 11, and there's not room.
Well, yeah, okay, depending on how much stuff you've got. Okay, so Zero Patch is a plan, a program, a canal, and what it does is it theoretically continues to update you on 10 without having to go to 11. Now, how long will that last? How good are those patches? How much stuff gets through them? I don't know.
I've done some research on it, and it's getting good reviews of, and companies are using it rather than updating, so.
Right,
like
right.
Real companies or just testimonials on Zero Patch's website?
Cause no, I never do that. I, you know, when I do my searches, I go away from their homepages.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And it is free for individual users. I don't know that I would. If you're going to run it, you need to be really, really careful.
Yeah.
About,
I wouldn't trust it.
About everything.
My gut says it's not something I would ever
run. Stay on the line, Steve. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Chris Horn, Steve from Greece, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the very known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I am the out-of-warranty Chris Horn.
Which is the only Chris Horn we're getting. And 33 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Steve from Greece, New York, on the line. Go ahead, Steve.
I thought I was done.
So you're talking about Zero Patch.
Yeah, Zero Patch and then the overlays.
Right, so basically, okay, so let's start with Zero Patch. Zero Patch is a non-Microsoft company that updates Windows 10. How good are they at it? Pretty good. Nobody is perfect. And as Windows 10 comes out of service, the bad guys are going to start looking at every vulnerability that gets patched in 11, and they know it will exist in 10. So the gamble is, can the Zero Patch people bring out a patch before the bad guys create an exploit?
Okay.
I can't answer that, and, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
It's basically a crapshoot. You pay your money, you take your chance.
Roll of the dice.
You know, put your money down on the come and go. I cannot speak to the efficacy going forward of Zero Patch.
Sounds fair.
My concern with the company is that businesses will already be able to pay Microsoft for extended support of Windows 10.
Yeah.
So if this company, Zero Patch, or anybody, is their intent is to make money off of businesses but not consumers.
I thought it was consumers could use it. Basically, I'm thinking it would be cheaper than paying Microsoft's ever-increasing fee to keep Windows 10 safe.
Windows 10 is not going to be safe after October. That's like the reality for a consumer is that you're going to be at risk no matter who you pay, to try and keep your computer safe and secure. And I think this week's Chrome/Firefox zero-day vulnerability is a really good example where it's in Windows. It's something baked into Windows that Firefox and Chrome both use, and they're stuck having to do the security update because it's a Windows dependency. Okay. And I wouldn't trust that after October of ever being reliably fixed, even if I'm paying somebody to, you know, make best effort.
Okay. I got some friends who are not going to like to hear that, but if it's the truth, it's the truth.
Yeah, we're not going to lie to them.
It right. is what it is.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's people who just do not wish to change.
No, and I get that. I absolutely get that. The problem is, at some point, they gotta. It's like a car. Your car, when your car dies, you buy a new car.
Right.
When there are 50 recalls on your car and it's not safe anymore, you buy a new car.
Yeah.
You know, I wish it were easier.
Oh, yeah. I was just wondering if this might be an alternative to, Microsoft has said that they will send security patches if you pay.
Right.
Yeah. But for businesses, that's for businesses.
Alternative.
Right. And this is a cheaper alternative. It is free for individual users. But nobody is going to promise you that their patches are any better than or even as good as Microsoft's.
And they do not. They do not promise that.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, again, what you end up with, and the same is true if you run Windows 11, right? There, you know, is a patch going to be good? Is it going to come out in time, et cetera, et cetera? You're paying your money and you're taking your chance. It's all a gamble. It's less of a gamble on if you're running Windows 11, but it's still a gamble.
Yeah.
But it's less of a gamble.
It would be nice if Windows 11 had some kind of easy mode. Please just make it look like Windows 10, even if under the hood things are different.
Well, you can do that, but it takes... You got to go here, you got to go there, right. You got to go here, you got to go there. It never looks entirely like Windows 10.
As a user, I have to already know I can do that.
Right.
And then also be able to do that. It would be for all the people that don't want to deal with any of that, that find the whole user interface change annoying.
Right. And if you Google, excuse me, if you search for, to make Dave happy because he uses DuckDuckGo, if you search for how to, you know, make 11 look like 10.
Yeah, that's what those overlays are for.
Right.
But you shouldn't need extra software. Like the throwing money at software to do a thing that the operating system can just do.
Right.
And you only have to do it once. So it's not like, you know, oh, it takes so long. It takes 15 minutes and you're done forever.
Yeah.
However much money that was.
My concern is that all those little softwares are preying on people that don't want to change or don't know how to make the user interface changes.
And if you pick the wrong one, who knows what's under the hood?
It's such a sketchy gray market area. I would err on the side of not ever using them at all.
Yep. So you can change your icon sizes and you can download other icons and you can move the thing to the left. You can change the wallpaper. You can change the icon sizes. You can get rid of the chat thing and the news thing. And, you know, half a dozen steps and you now look like Windows 10. Yeah. And it costs you $0 and maybe 15 minutes of your time.
You got to be able to do those things, though.
Right.
You know, people I talk to, I work on their computers or help them with, they're not going to be able to do this. I'm going to have to do it for them.
Yeah, we're not saying it's easy. This is a pain in the butt.
Right, and there is a program called Start 11, which changes the start menu for you, but it costs money. And if you're willing to pay that money, good for you. But I'm not going to promise that it will continue to work forever. I'm sure that Microsoft free. Will change something, and then they'll charge you to upgrade, and then, you know, it's already $10.
I would feel better about following along to somebody's YouTube video
machine,
on
right.
how to do
you
it
know,
for yourself.
Certainly try those first. And I understand you're doing the work for them because, you know, they want concierge service. They want chauffeur-driven computers, and you're willing to do that for them, and I get that.
Well, they can't drive. They need a driver.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I understand that. I do understand that. But there comes a point where they have to decide, do we pay money, and it may be that we are paying forever, or do we do it for free, but it takes a little longer, or they pay you to do it for them. Quite frankly, they should be willing to pay you for your time and expertise.
Yeah, I would never take money. I understand what you're saying.
What they're asking is for you to spend a lot of time, and that's your choice.
Maybe they could pay you in cookies.
Now, there you're talking. Pastries, yes.
Exactly right. But that's the idea. You're going to have to make some sort of decision as to which way you're going to go. And there's no, it's either pay or it takes you time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you very much for your time, gentlemen. I do always appreciate your sage advice and the other advice, too.
Yeah. All right, yeah, that's it. You're done. Thanks, Steve.
That's how we spot a real listener.
Bye-bye.
So I have quite a few times now, I have put Windows 11 on hardware that does not support Windows 11, right? Because you can go and use Rufus or something like that to force it. And I'll tell you, it runs badly. Along the same lines, I have taken an old Apple piece of hardware and used the OpenCore patcher to get the current version of Mac OS running on it. And I can get it working, but it runs very badly.
Very badly. And however, if you take an old Intel Mac and put Linux on it, it runs like a top.
Oh, like a champ, because Apple makes great hardware.
Apple makes great hardware.
Yes, that's really where we're going.
Except for me, I got to be honest with you, about a half a dozen laptops that I've done that for people, before I could get it to them or soon after they got it, the thermal paste gave way.
That's an age thing. Yeah. I'm not going to try and talk anybody through redoing the thermal paste on their laptop over the radio.
Or in person,
and
frankly.
That ends with, and then I ruined my laptop.
You start with Spludger, and you end up with, I ruined my laptop. All right, we got to get back to the phones. Our next caller is Robin, all the way from Berkeley, California. Hello, Robin. What's up?
Well, a lot of things. I could ask questions about Windows 10, because that's what I use, and I'm facing, of course, the changes coming soon.
Right. October 14th.
Yeah, and I had heard that Microsoft is going to offer two normal people I think it was $30 for a year extension. Is that not happening?
Yes, that is happening. So it's $30 the first year, $60 the second year, and I think $120 the third year.
Holy cow.
I think that's how that works.
Well, they want to make it painful. They want you to switch. Yeah. They don't really want to support it.
Right. And then what I've seen happen before with these changes is that the browsers, one by one, stop supporting the old version of Windows, or they have an extended release version that doesn't really work as well.
Yeah.
And eventually you're down in sludge land, and you just have to make the change.
Exactly. The problem is that every company has to make the decision, how many things do we support?
Because there's a cost.
Right.
A cost to that. And so
I've been using Windows since Windows 3.1.1, so
you're used to change.
These changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I actually called, though, is not about me and my Windows, but a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Just upgraded to a brand new iMac because he had one that was at least 10 years old and had become sludgy in performance.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, I had heard somewhere that Mac is soon going to do some sort of major cosmetic upgrade or other upgrade that's going to make the familiar desktop, I guess, on Mac all completely different. Is that true? And is this guy in front of me, he's not super, technically minded. He just wants something that works.
Okay, so
it's going to be an issue for him.
This is one of the many, many rumors. Every time Apple has, Apple's going to do their new WWDC, it's called, they're having an announcement. And what happens every single time is they tease their new logo, and then people start
making assumptions,
assuming what that logo means.
Right.
And this time, one of the things that they're assuming is that it's changing the entire operating system. Everything's going to be different. It's all going to be, depending on who you listen to, 3D, 4D, augmented reality only.
Scratch and sniff laptop.
It's all of it. Every single bit of it is bullpucky. We know nothing at this point. And the more outrageous, you know, the reality is that even a blind squirrel, et cetera, et cetera. So one of those rumors has got to be close to the truth. But we don't know which one, and it's probably not the one with 3D scratch and sniff. So
that's the one I wanted.
Yeah, there you go.
So the thing we have to do is wait for the Apple actual announcement and not get our undies in a twist.
But
good news.
The thing that is likely is that Apple will continue to converge how things like the iPad and the normal Mac OS work. Right now, with the ARM architecture, you can run a lot of iPad or iOS software on your ARM computer. And I think maybe even having a mode where your iMac or something has some more tablet-like features makes a lot of sense to me. But I haven't heard any reasonable rumors that that's about to happen. Under the hood, I think some of that stuff is moving in that direction, but I don't think we're there yet.
Right. So we'll see. We'll see when the announcement comes out, but right now it is all wild and ludicrous speculation.
Okay, that's good to hear. I just did a promo for you guys on Bluetooth. Are you guys on Bluetooth?
Bluetooth?
I'm sorry. Whoa. Hang on. I get my blues mixed up. Blue Sky.
I'm on Blue Sky. Absolutely.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I love Blue Sky.
Okay. I mean, is the show on there?
The show is not yet.
I think we're just on YouTube and on the Jazz 90.1 website.
I should take out a...
What is Steve doing right now? Why hasn't he put it on Blue Sky?
What is wrong with Steve? I'll put it on Blue Sky.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for the show, guys.
Thank you. You're welcome. I should mention that in 2 weeks, I think it is, April 9th, I will be giving a virtual talk on X alternatives. So I'll be talking about Blue Sky and Mastodon and Counter Social and like that. There's like 50 of them. I'm not going to cover them all.
What percentage of the talk is making fun of Steve, though? Because I was fully in when we headed down that road.
100% of it.
Okay. All right. I'm there.
So you'd be there. So if you head on over to the Apple Cider website I believe it's applecider.org. Hold on.
Apple Cider.
I'll tell you that in a moment.
That's the Rochester Apple user group from last century. And this century.
Yep. Yes. Awesome. Applecider.org. Wednesday the 9th is Twitter Alternatives with Nick Francesco. There should be a space between the slash and the end, but that's okay.
I thought you were going to say a space between Fran and Chesco.
We should have check it out. You'll be able to get a link to. It's going to be a Google Meet, so you'll be able to, or watch via the YouTube channel. So we'll be able to do all that stuff. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Cheektowaga, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, got a question about a device my buddy plugged into my TV last night because he wants me to check it out because I'm paying enormous amounts of money for Spectrum cable TV, and this device basically is a Fire Stick that plugs in, and it has an app that's loaded on it called Did You Media?
Ah, this is the side-loading of pirate media thing that's popular on Fire Sticks.
Yeah, there's I got 4,000 channels. I can watch a cricket match in India right now.
Okay.
I can watch Hila in Miami. I mean,
here's my take, because I think I have a semi-authoritative take on the Fire Stick universe. The side-loading of the Fire Stick content is really popular with people with Fire Sticks. And what I have heard within the security community is that software doing the side-loading is super popular to put you on a botnet so you're basically injecting a virus into your network just to get the content. So what can happen? Let's say I'm a bad person on the internet and I have access to these botnets. I can have complete access to everything on your network and make it do whatever I want.
You're opening yourself up to piracy.
No, that side loading the thing on the Fire Stick is piracy.
Yeah, but I mean more right. So in that.
It means hacking. Other people can come into your computer.
Like you're basically you're saying, "Hey, hackers, come inside my house, do anything you like."
Yep.
And the only reason bad things aren't happening is that none of us tend to be important enough for bad things to happen.
But as we always say, they're botnets. So the bots are going to grab everything they can anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would not use that.
I would pull it off your TV immediately.
I've heard this story many times, and every single time I've said, don't use it.
Well, I don't have a computer or a laptop or anything. This is just my TV at my house.
Do you have a phone? How do you do banking? Do you use your Wi-Fi for anything where you ever type your password?
I use I've got my KeyBank app.
If I had access to your Fire Stick, I would also have access to your KeyBank right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It's part of the network.
Please don't use that. Please tell your friend not to use it. If he insists on using it, stop being his friend.
Think of it this way. If you use a Fire Stick like that, and I'm a bad person, your network is now my network.
Right.
Isn't my network secure, though?
No, not anymore.
What you've done is you've added a program in it that says, come on in, anybody.
Yeah, it's like hacked into it.
So what you've done is taken away all of the security on your network.
Because that's what it's doing. It's hacking into all these programs that are normally you would have to pay for, and it's a form of piracy.
So I think the way they work, like physically, let's say, is they add a secret backdoor to your network that is available to the bad guys.
It doesn't matter how much security you've put in. Yeah. You've opened a back door. It's like locking the front door, setting a guard, alarms, everything else, and then leaving the loading gate wide open.
Right. I understand.
Yeah, so definitely do not ever use that again. Ever, ever, ever.
And no one else should use this either, and I'm sure there's listeners that have it or know somebody, and... Mm-hmm.
Nothing's going to happen to me. They go back to the same old thing. Oh, nothing will happen to me. I don't have anything important to take.
If you've got $50 in your banking account, they now have your $50.
You have an identity. That's Hello, that. With your information on it, your probably your birthdays and any other passwords or anything else saved on it.
If I've got your banking information, I can open credit in your name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with me unplugging this, then everything will just go back to normal then?
Yep.
Okay.
Should I would yeah. make I sure know. That if I've, you know, whatever devices you have, I would run an antivirus program.
Since he's only got, he said he only has his phone.
Still.
No computer.
You know, he run AV.
We got an iPhone.
Yeah, okay, Sophos runs on an iPhone, and you know, it isn't necessary, but it certainly couldn't hurt.
Right.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad I called, because... I'm glad you called, too.
I would reboot my television in case it stuck something in your TV. It may not have, you know...
Do you have a smart TV?
Yeah, that's what I'm watching it through, so, with Vizio.
Okay. I don't know. That seems unlikely.
It wouldn't hurt.
Possible.
Again, it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
No, rebooting is a two-minute process.
All of that is unlikely. But the reality is that
you know,
most of these
sorry.
Side-loading piracy media content delivery systems have... like a poison pill kind of payload to them that puts you on a botnet and at someone else's beck and call as far as your internet connection goes.
Right. And check on your smart TV to see what apps you have that you may not have loaded.
Yeah.
Check on your phone to see what apps you may have that you didn't load.
And if your computer is part of one of those botnets doing something bad, the FBI can come knocking and take your stuff.
Because you're the guy that
it's
gets
your
caught.
Your network. You're responsible for what
if you
it does.
Have to prove it wasn't you.
Good luck
okay.
with that.
And good luck with that. So be aware. Never okay. First, Andy, never let somebody else plug something into your computer or television or phone or anything.
Unless it's Nick or myself.
Right.
We're totally safe.
We're totally
well,
safe.
Well, yeah. This wasn't somebody off the street. That
we're
was
kidding.
On snake oil. I know this person.
Well, yeah. you know the guy, but he clearly
right. But they didn't know this stuff. They didn't
right.
know that.
Right. Okay.
Right. Cool. Thanks, guys.
Sure. Thanks. Sorry, Andy. I hope he was wearing the brown pants.
I think he called because it was too good to be true.
Yeah, and it is.
It is too good to be true.
It is too good to be true. You know, there's certainly the temptation of thousands of channels, but they're piracy. It's stealing. There are commandments about that. A commandment about that. Anyway, that's it. We are done for another week. Good calls this week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody's calls. Sorry we didn't get to all the pieces of the calls of some of the people who did call. Wow, that didn't make sense.
And I'm sorry for my answers, period.
We're just sorry Chris Horn was here. I tried to keep him out, but he was right there when I got to the door, and there's nothing I could do about that. I want to thank Dave Enright. I might as well thank Chris Horn. I'm Nick Francesco. We want to thank each and every one of you. And we want to remind you that next week does start the pledge drive, so keep that in mind as you listen next week. And we hope that you will listen next week and every week to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?